This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, let's go to the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford Hotline. And we are joined by a guy who I would say is a friend of the show. He's been on so many times. He's had some pretty good conversations with Anthony Lyme. I would say he's a friend of the station as well. Richard Deitch from Sports Illustrated. He is the media columnist, and really, I enjoy talking to you every time you come on, Richard. So thank you for being on the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford Hotline. How are you?
Mercedes-Benz, a very high-end hotline.
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? We don't mess around.
That's only for you. We have other things for other people.
It's true.
By the way, does Anthony Lyme still work at the station, or is he on a bus right now, or maybe not even on a bus, but is he at the Bristol campus knocking on ESPN executives' windows, praying that they will give him a tryout on air?
Unfortunately, last time I saw him, he was on a milk carton. Sorry, man. No. He's still here. He's still doing mornings. He's doing a good job, too. And he likes you, so that's all that matters. Listen, you were the first guy I thought of when I was watching the All-Star game, and I wondered what was going through your mind when A-Rod was walking around in a suit interviewing guys while they were playing the game. What Fox does, you know, I give Fox credit because they've come up with a lot of things that we take for granted when we watch a game. That, like, it used to be taboo to put a score up because you were scared that people would change the channel because if they knew the score, they might leave the game. And Fox broke down all those walls. But I got to tell you, and I like A-Rod. I'm not a hater. But those interviews were so uncomfortable. I don't need to see a guy in a suit walking around on a baseball diamond. What'd you think of the All-Star game?
See, to me, I look at it the other way. I'm certainly not a hater on Fox here. The game itself has, because of the fact that interleague play is not a novelty anymore, and in 1975, the All-Star game was an incredible thing, and you had never seen the other league, and that's why 30 million people tuned in. Interleague play has changed all that. The uniqueness of seeing National League versus American League is gone, and it's reflected in the viewership. Viewership numbers, essentially, over the last 15 years, have only gone one way. They've gone down. So I think if you're Fox, you have to honestly just try everything you can. So I'm not bothered by that. It's an exhibition game. I understand previously it meant something, especially to the team in the World Series. But in the end, it does not count in the standings for the players, generally speaking, underscore generally speaking. So if you're Fox, you have to try whatever you can to provide viewers with as much access as possible, even if it's kind of awkward at times, and even if it's not, you're not used to it. Just, I think, to keep interest in what ultimately is an exhibition. So yeah, I mean, it's a little disjointed to see A-Rod on the field, but I like Buck talking to the outfielders.
I love that.
I like that was cool. I like the kind of the different camera angles that we got. So I'm all for that. I think if you're Fox, you have to try anything you can to keep viewer interest in what ultimately is an exhibition. That said, the All-Star game, in my opinion, still remains the closest All-Star game to the actual competition of the game. If you watch the NHL All-Star game or the NBA All-Star game, you get no defense. It's essentially a shootout situation for both. And then if you watch, I mean, the Pro Bowl, obviously these guys can't tackle with the ferociousness that they do in the regular season because it would be insane. Nobody wants to get hurt in the All-Star game. So I feel like baseball's the closest because I feel like at least the pitchers are, you know, they're not throwing softballs up there. They're legitimately throwing their pitches. So it is the at least in terms of competition, to me, it's still the closest thing to the competition of the sport.
You talked about the camera angles and all, and I've often wondered this, that once they invented the center field camera, 99% of the pitches are shown from center field, and you don't get a sense of the game, especially now that teams are shifting on almost every player and you don't know if it's a routine ground ball or it's a ball in the hole. So why don't they go back to the high home cameras that sometimes are behind home plate just to get to see what the fielders are doing? Why don't they do that anymore?
So honestly, I don't know the answer. It's a good question. It'd be a really good one for the director or the producer. I think they use the camera that they do because they found that it's either the most comfortable for viewers or it's the one that the viewers are used to. But you know, I think as a general rule, you could I mean, again, you'd have to talk to a director to see, to back me up on this, but I feel like baseball remains the most traditional in terms of the camera angles have generally been the same over the course of generation after generation, where they have tried different things in football and basketball, et cetera. I would think, and this is just only a guess, that a lot of it has to do with the fact that viewers are just used to that angle.
All right, I want to talk to you about Mayweather-McGregor. What are your thoughts on this show? I use that. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. But I've got to watch it. I'm driving by the train wreck, and I want to know what they've said to each other over the last couple of days. And I'll be honest, I'm ready to throw $100 at this thing to watch them fight.
Listen, I congratulate them on basically hooking you. So congrats to them. They have PT Barnum you, which is beautiful. You're interested for the reasons you said. It's a train wreck. You know, there's elements of danger, and you don't know what's going to happen. Both guys are absolutely playing to the base stereotypes in our culture, from race to, sexism, homosexuality, whatever. I mean, they're both going to play it to the hilt. And they're trying to convince you that the animus and the hatred is really legitimately real. And maybe by the end of the press tour it is. But both of these guys have been doing this for such a long time. They're absolutely just selling it. They're never going to punch each other at a press conference because they know where the money ultimately lies. And to me, I don't knock anybody who pays for it. If they want to entertain themselves and pay the $100, I mean, go for it. But if you just step back as a sports fan, the idea that this can possibly be a competitive fight, at least in my opinion, is absurd. You have one of the great boxers of all time. They are competing in his sport. The gloves and everything else are set to what he does. And you're bringing a guy in Colin McGregor, while obviously an amazing MMA talent, I don't even think in the amateurs has ever come close to fighting the caliber of a fighter that Floyd Mayweather was. So I just don't know logically in sports why anybody would think that this fight's going to last longer than 2 or 3 minutes. But the spectacle of it, they've been really good. It's like professional wrestling on steroids with all this press conference stuff, and think they're going to hook a lot of people in because of it.
I listen to some of the arguments about the true art of boxing and going up against an MMA guy. And I think when you take the MMA tools away from an MMA fighter, I don't know how he can survive in that ring for that long and that quick. And then Les and I were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, boxing being entertainment. And to me, I said, listen, how could boxing not be entertainment? When I think about Muhammad Ali, not only do I think of him as a great fighter, but I think of him as a great entertainer. Is boxing still entertainment, or was it never entertainment at all?
I think you got to separate it to, like, the stuff prior to the actual bout is all entertainment. It's all marketing. It's all publicity. It's all the personalities of the fighters. So it's absolutely entertainment and still is to this day. I think when you're in the arena, it's absolutely sport. I mean, it's among the most physical of the physical sports. It's one man versus another man, or one woman versus another woman. And there's true violence or at least the controlled violence in terms of what they're doing. The difference is that we lost a couple of generations who potentially could have been boxing fans because they took the sport from over-the-air television to pay-per-view. Now, that was obviously a really smart business proposition for all the people who got paid, but at least in my opinion, what it did is it took anybody who's like, let's say, 45 and younger, and eliminated so many of those people to be boxing fans. Then, of course, you had just a lot of very questionable and shady decisions, shady promoters, shady deal making, and then MMA comes in, which just feels like more of a sport that could connect to younger people. Sure, it's pay-per-view, but at least it felt like you were getting the best fighters fighting everybody. I mean, you know, the quintessential thing for boxing is, like, look how long it took for Mayweather and Pacquiao to fight. They never fought in their prime. They ended up fighting when both were, generally speaking, old, and the fight was a dud. That's like boxing in a nutshell, where you got to give the MMA people credit. Their best people fight, like, in their primes. The fights may be short. The fights may not be as compelling as boxing, but they fight, and that's – I think one of the reasons why they've, in my opinion, surpassed boxing in terms of popularity.
Richard, football right around the corner, both college and the pros. Other than the NFL deciding it's okay to celebrate a little bit in the end zone, anything new that we're going to see as far as the production is concerned?
I think commercial, they're probably eventually going to play around with the frequency of commercial breaks. So I think you're going to get less commercial breaks and then longer commercials with an eye towards sort of making the broadcast feel a little tighter. The other thing I just think you're going to get in terms of, you know, and obviously there's always talent changes. Tony Romo is CBS's lead analyst now. That's a very, very big change. Obviously, Phil Simms gone, Tony Romo in. People will be watching him to see how he does initially. And Jay Cutler, obviously, is now Fox on Fox's number two team again. Very, very big games. But I think the biggest story for the NFL in terms of viewership, ratings, production, et cetera, will be that they're going to get a very good narrative early in the year because I think the viewership numbers are going to be significantly up from last year. You don't have the fervor of, I mean, obviously the Trump news cycle continues on a daily basis, but it's not the campaign. So I think the fervor of that is going to be a little lessened. And if you remember last year, a lot of quarterbacks out early and a lot of dud games. And I just don't expect that to be the same case. You'll have Brady back for week one. I would expect Cam Newton, some other quarterbacks to be better than they were last year. And so that's where I think you're going to have a very big NFL television story is I think you're going to see a lot of stories pushed out by the NFL about how the viewership numbers are up from last year.
Richard, last question. Adrian Wojnarowski is on your podcast right now. With him switching from Yahoo over to ESPN, how does that change the game?
Yeah, he's not on my podcast. He has his own podcast. I wish the guy.
Oh, you were on his podcast.
He's too. I have not been on his podcast either. He's too big time.
Well, I need to get you guys together and have a podcast then.
This is information from Lima. I won't even blame you.
it's a research.
It's a game. It's a game changer in the fact that one of the things at ESPN, it's important to them. Now I don't know how you monetize this per se, but it's important to them in terms of getting out to the public that they are the top NBA news organization is to get ownership on the clicker when it comes to stories, or the ticker, I should say, not the clicker. And so Wojnarowski is the best newsbreaker in the NBA. He's going to break a ton of stories. And when you're watching SportsCenter and all these other ESPN shows, you're going to see on the bottom of that ticker, you know, ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski is reporting that so-and-so is going to this team, so-and-so's going to that team. So he's the most sourced NBA reporter, so it's a big-time hire. Is it a game-changing hire? We'll see. You know, it'll be a question of how they can monetize him. He's not going to have his own television show. He's not really a television guy. But in terms of information, he's an amazing information broker. What is always strange, or what will always remain strange, is they're paying Mark Stein right now not to work, and they're paying him not to work for a couple of years. That seems just bewildering to me. I mean, to me, if you have a chance to have two great newsbreakers on your staff, you should take it. And yet they have benched Mark Stein. Maybe it's a way to get some of Wojnarowski's guys to come in, but that's a strange one to me, to pay Mark Stein millions of dollars not to work.
Hey, Richard, just last question for you. When ESPN laid off all those people, how much of it was personality, how much of it was political, and how much of it was fiscal?
I think it was almost all fiscal. Certainly wasn't personality because, like, you're laying off John Clayton or Jane McManus.
Maybe like backstage personality stuff, not on air.
Honestly, I don't think so.
Okay.
In one or two cases, sure. But, you know, knowing most of the people who were laid off and sort of knowing the background, it wasn't personal. There were certainly decisions made as to who got laid off. That could be a little political, obviously. And then, you know, finally, they just made a fiscal decision to me in terms of they got into trouble with their spending on rights deals combined with losing subscribers. And then even though they make a boatload of money, they are still under the aegis of Disney. Disney has stockholders that demand basically the stock to always go up. And
sure,
Bob Iger told John Skipper that he had to reduce costs. What is always the easiest way to reduce costs in any media business? It's always to lay off people. And so that's what they did. I will say this. ESPN can spin it how they want. They obviously still have great journalists. But when you lay off 100 writers and editors, you can't say you are as committed to journalism as you once were. It's just the facts of the facts.
Richard, thank you very much. Your latest podcast, though, I will say, has Ian Eagle of CBS, Westwood One, and Tennis Channel, the YES Network. So
that
I will plug
familiar.
That. That's from yesterday.
I appreciate that.
Thank you, Richard.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Richard.
It.
Thank you.
Thanks Good for night. Being a friend of the Bye-bye. Show. I love when he comes on because we always get to talk Terrific. About you know what's going on behind the scenes. And the.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.